From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In a handful of days, David Petraeus has gone from revered to surrounded by scandal. The most celebrated general in a generation, now out as head of the CIA, is one-time number two, General John Allen, top commander in Afghanistan, in some kind of trouble, under investigation. We're trying to sort out what's significant here, what's sordid, what's important. This hour on Point, the blow-up around David Petraeus and military writer Tom Ricks on America and its generals. You can join the conversation. What's your reaction to this blow-up? Was Petraeus right to go? What's the whole story here? What really matters? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thomas Ricks joins us in a few minutes, author of The Generals. But first, from Washington is Devlin Barrett. He covers security and law enforcement for The Wall Street Journal, has been following this suddenly sprawling story as it's unfolding. Devlin Barrett, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Fine. This is a little hard to keep up with, and it's a little hard to gauge whether it's significant or just a whole lot of unseemly, unbecoming, but not necessarily big deal developments. What's the latest, first of all, on General Allen? Is there still an investigation? And if so, of what exactly?
Yeah, it's one of the pleasures and frustrations of this story is that every time you think you understand the cast of characters, someone just pops on stage that you haven't seen before, and you'd have to figure out who they are and why they're there. In the case of General Allen, what's happened is, in the course of the investigation into the Petraeus case, they came across a lot of emails between a woman named Lisa Kelly in Tampa and General Allen. And they're trying to understand if there's anything alarming in those emails. They've been described as possibly flirtatious or possibly inappropriate, but we've also been told, frankly, that as they sort through what's described as 20 to 30,000 pages of emails between the two of them, that's open to interpretation. So it may be that there is frankly nothing of real import there. I think part of what's been happening in this process is everyone's been questioning, did the FBI do enough or too much in this instance? And when the dust settles, what we may find is that the FBI forwarded this stuff out of an abundance of caution so that the military investigators could look at and determine if they had any issues with it. But ultimately, maybe they won't. And what we've also been told is that there's no criminal issue that anyone has found to date with General Allen. It has not risen to that level. And it's at this point, it's strictly a question of, is there any military discipline issues at stake? And there may not be.
Leon Panettis, Defense Secretary, sort of walking that one back or trying to out of Australia in the last 24 hours. Does it appear, or can we tell at this point, if General Allen's career may go back on track to head up NATO in Europe or not?
I think from my sense of it, is he certainly has a good chance to still get his career back on track. I think part of the issue from the government's point of view is the timing of all this, in terms of the emails were forwarded from the FBI over the weekend. There was supposed to be a confirmation hearing later this week. So the administration was faced with the choice of, do we go ahead with the confirmation hearing, not entirely sure what was going on between the two of them, or do we delay it, take a deeper look to make sure we don't have any problems, and then go forward.
Let's steer back toward David Petraeus, if we can, Devlin. I mean, I'm just seeing a news story coming in here saying that he has agreed now to testify about the attack in Benghazi before the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. That was one thing that gave a kind of lots of speculation around this whole saga as soon as it developed, because people have been waiting on Benghazi. He was supposed to testify, and then, boom, he's out as head of the CIA. People were quick to wonder if there was some kind of cover-up here or some kind of connection. What's the evidence showing?
I think, again, that's the concerns and the suspicions arise mostly because of the timing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, frankly, it never made much sense to me that the fact that Petraeus resigned in scandal meant that he was never going to testify about Benghazi. I mean, former officials testify before Congress all the time. I think you can ask a question, does the scandal about his personal life delay his testimony or prolong the period of time when we don't know as much as we'd like to know about what happened in Benghazi?
Mm-hmm.
But I never quite understood the concern that Petraeus would vanish from the face of the earth, because that doesn't seem to be his MO. That doesn't seem to be how he's run his life.
Though, I mean, all of this has sort of put that life in a uncomfortable new light for him. What about the timing of the FBI investigation, the whole odd background of Jill Kelly, this Tampa socialite, having gone to the FBI, having spoken with an agent there who seemed to have gotten up in arms about this, who went to Eric Cantor, the minority whip in the House, about this? What about the timing and the political, I don't know, tinge this has taken on?
Right, yeah, and you said Jill Kelly, you're right, I'm sorry, I think I said Lisa earlier. I'm a little sleep-deprived, given the last 4 days. Yeah, I mean, timing has been such a big part of the concern and alarm over this case. And basically what you have is a situation where an investigation that began in and around May because of some harassing emails slowly moved forward until there were a series of interviews with Mr. Petraeus and the mistress, the woman with whom he was having the affair, you know, in the weeks and months just before the election. And in the middle of all that, you have a situation where the FBI agent who handles the original complaint decides that he's concerned that his own bosses are covering the whole thing up, possibly for, you know, protecting the administration in a delicate election season. Mm-hmm. And so he goes to Congress in his own mind, apparently, as a whistleblower, and that generates a whole other series of steps that are taken. And, you know, in some ways, the timing is an integral part of each piece of this investigation.
Yes.
And, you know, so, and it breeds more suspicion, frankly. The whole timing of this breeds suspicion, and I think that's why you're getting all these arguments and questions on the Hill, and that's why it's... that part of it isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Well, I mean, suspicions and arguments and questions are easy, but is there any evidence at this point that there was a deliberate foot dragging in terms of publicizing or even taking this to the White House?
I see nothing to indicate that. I think the question becomes, was the Justice Department, was the FBI fairly interpreting their responsibilities? Because they have a responsibility not to share information about criminal investigations. Mm-hmm. That is simply a policy.
With who? With the Attorney General? With anybody?
Outside of the Justice Department.
Well, but that would include
the military, the intelligence, and the White House.
Yeah.
But they also have an obligation to share information that has intelligence value and concerns national security. And I think what you're starting to see is that they had to make a choice as to which of those was the major primary concern. And it certainly seems that while the criminal investigation was going on, they judged that the criminal need for maintaining silence was the right one. And then once they decided that there probably hadn't been a crime committed by Mr. Petraeus, they decided that the intelligence need was to kick it up to the higher ups. And I think that decision, both those decisions, I think are going to be questioned repeatedly on the Hill.
Why at this point, from your reporting, Devlin, if I just asked you plainly, why did David Petraeus resign? What's the answer to that?
The simplest answer is if a junior official in his own agency had done the same thing, that junior official would be expected to leave.
I mean, any official in the CIA that has an affair has to leave? Really?
An affair, not simply an affair. Remember, there's a couple different parts of this.
Okay.
You're having an affair with a woman who is the subject of a criminal investigation.
Broadwell was the subject of a criminal investigation at what point?
Over the summer.
I mean, because of the harassing emails allegedly sent to
her. Because of the harassing emails. And remember, classified documents were found in her computer, and that was also a concern. Now, both she and Petraeus say those classified documents did not come from him. But as you saw earlier this week, you know, FBI agents conducted mm-hmm. a consensual search at Ms. Broadwell's home.
Yeah, middle of the night.
To try and understand a little better, you know, did we miss anything? Are there anything other in terms of security information that at her house that we should be aware of to fully understand what she was doing?
To pursue that for a second, on the classified documents, do you know, does anybody outside the FBI know whether – Could those be documents that were related to her research a couple of years back now for the biography of Petraeus? Or are these more current and beyond and apart from, you know, the work and life of the general, if that's possible?
It's a great question. I would love to know. I've been asking everyone I can find, and we simply don't know the answer to that question yet. What we've been told is that it was classified sensitive material. And they have been trying to figure out, I think, one of the unresolved questions here for the Bureau is, where did that come from? Is there another issue or problem that has to be addressed?
Do you see some kind of matrix of scandal beyond the facts that are on the table in front of us now here, Devlin? I mean, I guess not, or it would be in your newspaper, but people are trying to assess the weight of this, and it's slippery.
It is slippery, and one of the oddities in my mind of this whole issue is that, you know, every time the FBI opened a door and looked at something, they found something that was worrisome and possibly weird, but didn't ultimately rise to the level of criminal action. Now, having said that, they're still investigating, as the search showed. They're still investigating, and there's still a chance that they could find something that leads them to bring a criminal charge. Although, frankly, that looks fairly unlikely at this stage, at least against any officials. So the short answer is, at this point, you know, there's no next shoe to drop, but we've been surprised by all the shoes that have dropped so far, so we should get used to being surprised.
Wow. A big retired general out at the CIA. Another under investigation, we're told, though exactly what's there. Well, we'll see. Devlin Barrett and many other reporters all over it, but Devlin Barrett on it big time for the Wall Street Journal. Devlin, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the David Petraeus scandal, the investigation of top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, John Allen, and what's up with American generals, with Thomas Ricks, author of The Generals. Joining us now from San Francisco is Tom Ricks, senior fellow at the Center for New American Security, contributing editor at Foreign Policy, writes the Best Defense blog, best-selling writer on the Iraq War in Fiasco, and David Petraeus there in The Gamble. His new book is The Generals, American Military Command from World War II to Today. Tom Ricks, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Good to talk to you.
So here you are standing up right away and pretty loudly for David Petraeus. We want to dig in here, Tom, with your overall theme. But on the Petraeus front and what we've seen in the last week, what do you say?
I'd say it's a mess, but I don't think it had to be this big a mess. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Robert Bork confirmation hearings a couple of decades ago when somebody dug out and published the videos that Bork had rented at a video store back then. Why are we going down that road? Why is that necessary? Why are we more focused on the sex lives of our leaders than the real lives of our soldiers? It all kind of makes me want to move to Canada.
Okay. I mean, I take your point there, but what do you say to the citizen just trying to assess this, who's seen, you know, the work that David Petraeus has done over the years, may be very admiring of it, may not admire all of it, I don't know, but look at this and say he was head of the CIA and he was in an affair, with a woman who then there's these odd emails to another woman. I mean, it just looks like a mess to be around the top intelligence officer, or does it not to you?
No, it does, obviously. I was surprised by it. If you had asked me who would be the last general to be involved in a sex scandal, I would have said David Petraeus. That said, the newsflash in Washington, D.C. this week is that David Petraeus is a human being. The second newsflash is that we have put David Petraeus and hundreds of thousands of other soldiers through a hell of a lot over the last 10 years. Petraeus did 3 combat tours in Iraq, 1 in Afghanistan, was exposed to a lot of other dangers in the course of the last 10 years. In the past, had a parachuting accident in which he smashed his pelvis. It was put back together with some steel bolts. Mm-hmm. He was shot once through the chest in a training accident. This guy's given a lot to his country, and then he slipped up. And it strikes me that we are being less generous with him than he and his family were with us.
I mean, I've heard you say that, and nobody can really question what he's given to the country. I mean, that is a lot of service, a very high profile, and in the assessment of many, yourself certainly included. Very important contributions right there. But does it still come back to the office that he's until last Friday, was holding, head of the CIA. Can we really, is it intolerant or, you know, grudging to ask for something more from the CIA chief? Could President Obama really have said, David, don't do that again, now go back and be head of the CIA? Could he have done that?
I think he could have if he was confident that it would not leak out. And then if it did leak out, eventually you say, look, it's a private matter in his family and he's making amends and dealing with it. It really bothers me, though. I really think this is a moral issue.
Okay.
That we are debating more the sex life of a former CIA chief than the fact that the CIA was involved in torture over the last 10 years. I just find that morally staggering.
You know, Tom, I have to say, with respect, I don't think that that's true. I think I've heard years of debate back in the day over torture. It's calmed down now some, but I mean, there was a lot. This has been up, what, for 4 days? We had months and years of national sort of writhing about torture.
And nothing much came of it.
Well,
nobody was ever told, yeah. No hearings on the Hill about it. Basically a lot of talk in the media, and then no evidence ever produced. There just seems to be a whole lot more psychic energy going into this than it deserves. I'm especially appalled by the John Allen situation. I mean,
talk to us about
Marine,
that. He was portrayed as number two in Tampa and succeeded him in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and a Marine sends flirtatious emails to a woman, and this provokes an FBI investigation or a military investigation. I mean, what are we thinking? I mean, where are we as a nation when we care more about that sort of thing than the prosecution of these wars? We just had a political campaign in which a war in Afghanistan that we're engaged in was barely mentioned. Suddenly, we're all over the fact that a Marine officer might have sent inappropriate emails to a woman. I mean, I think I must be missing something because I don't understand.
Well, maybe it's because
where this is going.
Well, you're close to this world, so maybe you have some kind of confidence that this is not indicative of some other problem. I think for a lot of Americans looking in from the outside, well, if there's an FBI investigation, then maybe there is some security problem over here, or thousands of pages of emails and what was in them. And you just heard Devlin Barrett saying, there's security documents at the home maybe of Paula Broadwell. I mean, do you discount all that stuff? Do you think there's, on the material, potentially significant side of security leak or something else? You're not worried about that, Tom?
No, I'm not, honestly. You can't hang around the U.S. military without being given classified materials. I can't tell you the number of classified documents I handled in the course of
because
of
it's all classified.
Yeah, and it's there's a classification on it, but they say look, in order to explain what we're doing here, these numbers here, these documents, use this, don't use this, don't source this, but here's in order to have a reporter understand it, you're constantly being told things that are classified, partly because they say, look, this document is classified, we prefer you not write about it, and here's why. There's some honest explanation going on there. The theme of my book, and this is the sort of the concern I have, is we are talking about two of our best generals in recent years here, Petraeus and Allen, and we're not talking about the execution of their duties, their performance. We're talking about their private lives. We have a whole bunch of mediocre generals who seem to have kept their pants on at the right time. And we don't even talk about their performance, their competence.
Tom, we're going to talk about that right here, and I'm glad you're with us to do it. We've got people calling in on this whole theme and beyond. Tom Rick's new book is The General's American Military Command from World War II to Today, and it is very critical of a lot of mediocre and worse U.S. generals, David Petraeus and John Allen, not among them by his lights. Tom, stand by if you would. Omaha, Nebraska, Carrie's calling. Carrie, you're on with Tom Rick's.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I think that it is absolutely appropriate that Petraeus steps down because my husband is a military officer. And when you accept the commission to become an officer, you pledge to uphold those tenets of the UCMJ. And he violated that by committing adultery and also by lying about it. And people talk a lot about how we're focusing on his personal life, but I think that when you are an officer in the military, there is a very blurred line between what your job duties are and your personal life, in that the choices in your personal life directly reflect your personal integrity and your ability to make appropriate decisions.
Hey, Carrie, I'll put all that to Tom Ricks. When you say he lied about it, what are you pointing to there? I mean, he seemed to have conceded it very quickly last week, and he resigned.
Well, yes, he did resign, but for however many months, 8 or 9 months, he was making a deliberate choice to cheat on his wife and to conceal that by this use of the draft holder and the email that they were sharing or whatever, you know, it was.
Let me get Tom Rick's first reaction. Stick with us, Carrie. Tom, what do you say? There's the wife of an officer who says, hey, he should be out.
As I understand it, he was retired at the time of the affair.
That's what he's asserting as far as I know.
I mean, if we're going after everybody who's having affairs, it's going to be a very strange world in Washington, D.C., if we are going to turn over every rock. It would be very interesting if we tried to run the U.S. Congress that way.
Nobody home. Carrie, what about it? He says he was out of the military by the time this affair went on, so...
Well, as an officer, you hold your commission, whether you're retired or not. So you're still subject to the tenets of the UCMJ, first of all. And secondly, I do think that the coverage, although a little bit intense, I think that has more to do with sort of the 24/7 media cycle.
Yeah.
I think that the focus is slightly wrong. I think that perhaps the focus should be on what the strain of separation is doing to relationships, the deployment tempos, or the pressures and the stresses of being in the theater. However,
doesn't that make you more forgiving or not, Carrie?
Well, no, it doesn't. How can you expect... Well, first of all, he is accountable to the U.S. taxpayers. He's also accountable to his chain of command. And how can you expect people working underneath you in the chain of command to uphold those same tenets if you're not doing it yourself? That's the moral fiber of the chain of command is very, very important, especially when you look at how different being in the military is to, say, being in the private sector.
Carrie, we've got it. Let me put that one to Tom Ricks as well. Tom, I mean, there's, I guess Carrie's just not going to buy that retirement is enough to free this general from this command. And she, but you can hear the expectation there. Moral fiber in the chain of command, essential.
I feel like we're like doing a tennis match here, and you're calling the shots back and forth. Carrie, I agree with you on the strain of service. And this does strike me that the Dave Petraeus we have seen in the last week is not the Dave Petraeus I saw 15 years ago or 10 years ago. This does seem to somebody who has been somehow behaving differently. That said, I disagree with you about sort of the moral fiber issue. In my experience, frontline troops want one thing from their commanders in combat. They want competence. They will put up with a lot of bad stuff. Racism, alcoholism, pure son of a bitchism like from George Patton, if they believe their leader will help them survive combat. And this is not something we talk about. We don't talk about combat effectiveness in our leaders, I think partly because as a society, we are no longer aware enough of the military to understand it and to judge it. And so we go to the reflex motion of judging people on their personal lives.
Right.
It reminds me of the old newsroom saying that the two worst beats in a newspaper are sports and sex, because editors all think they're experts on both.
We take the point there, though. I mean, Carrie's got a front row seat as wife of a serving officer. But, Carrie, I appreciate your call. Keith in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on with Tom Ricks.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hopefully you guys are doing great. But I'm a little confused. Unless these women are spies, I'm trying to figure out why all this, you know, release of all this information. And the timing is terrible in lieu of the congressional hearings. Another thing is, you know, this is something we should have expected when you have women in the military and you're giving them that much access, and particularly to Petraeus, who, like I said, he was in retirement when it happened. And, you know, he served our country well. And I can definitely understand a young lady whose husband's a military officer. I can relate to that. But nonetheless, these things happen when you have male and female in an environment that we have.
And Keith, you say congressional hearings. Are you talking about the Benghazi inquiries?
Yes. Yes, this is very unusual for them to, you know, the week of or 2 weeks of, all of a sudden, they have no access to Petraeus, at least not for now, and then it will be behind closed doors. I think the timing is a little suspect.
Tom Ricks, thank you, Keith. Tom Ricks, how about that, the whole Benghazi line of concern and this development and its timing?
I'm going to sound like a sourpuss here, but I think Benghazi's been hyped as well. In my experience of covering firefights, incidents, things are, it's the most confusing possible experience you will ever have. I'm not sure we'll ever get to the bottom of Benghazi. But I do think the media, especially Fox News, have been practically smoking crack on Benghazi. I just don't think it was that big a thing. I think it got inflated by the campaign. That said, I agree with a lot of what Keith said. Or else he agrees with me. I'm not sure which.
To your point about accountability of military leadership, President Obama did ask, or at least announce, the resignation of General Curtis Ham, the AFRICOM commander, after the Benghazi incident. Is that an example of what you're calling for here, accountability? If the people, if it doesn't work, go?
I don't think there's a relation between those two events.
Really?
The departure of General Ham and Benghazi.
So that wasn't a kind of after-the-fact accountability?
I don't think so, no. In fact, if anything, I think Obama kind of keeps the military at arm's length. I'd like to see the executive civilian leadership more involved in accountability of generalship and telling also the military to enforce standards of performance. I mean, basically, what I'm saying is reward success, punish failure, and promote younger officers who have shown ability. And we don't really do that in the military in the way we should. We did do it in World War II.
Petraeus wasn't in your writing, Tom, sort of exhibit A of that happening, though, and now gone.
Petraeus was always an outlier in the military, not well liked in the Army, and there was kind of a sigh of relief when he left. He had a successful first tour in Iraq up in Mosul, and then a successful third tour in Iraq overseeing the surge. Mm-hmm. He followed three failed generals out there, Tommy Franks, Ricardo Sanchez, and George Casey. He came in and he did what a general should do, which is to examine the situation, understand the conflict he's engaged in, devise a response, and then implement that response, which may be the hardest part of it. Generalship is a very hard thing, and Petraeus did it very well and stood out because of that. And it saddens me to see one of the most successful generals we've had in decades go down in flames like this.
Why would that have made him unpopular in the military? You would think effectiveness would be something that would make a general popular in the U.S.
Not military. If you have a military that values and veers towards mediocrity. He makes everyone else look bad. In addition, he had a Ph.D. from Princeton, which makes him an intellectual and so suspect. And he liked Washington, liked talking to journalists, to politicians. And so that basically was three strikes, too successful, too smart, and too social with Washington.
So, and there he is. First out of the military, President Obama asked that before he went to the CIA. Now out of the CIA, does that take some kind of, I don't know, legacy or pressure away from the search for excellence that you're encouraging here, Tom?
I think it does. People, whenever you see an outlying general now, someone like John Allen or Petraeus, the other people in the military are going to say, oh, see what happened to Petraeus?
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the David Petraeus scandal, the investigation of top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, John Allen, and what's up with American generals. Thomas Ricks writes about them over decades, and very critically of most, many, in his new book, The Generals, American Military Command from World War II to Today. He says we've got a problem. He has seen David Petraeus, General Petraeus, as kind of apart from that problem, or the exception in many ways, General Allen, for that matter, as well. Tom, I think you've got Eisenhower, Ike, on your mind in World War II days as we look at David Petraeus.
Yeah, I was thinking about the call from Carrie in Omaha, and I don't want to be flippant in addressing her concerns. This question came to me about one of my favorite generals, Eisenhower. During World War II, Eisenhower was the supreme Allied commander in Europe. He was carrying on fairly openly a relationship with his beautiful red-haired British driver, Kay Summersby.
Mm-hmm.
Would a spouse who was about to have a soldier land at Omaha Beach want Eisenhower relieved because of that affair? Should Ike have been sent home in January 44 in disgrace, with the knowledge that removing him and putting in a newer and perhaps less competent general would result in more deaths during the D-Day landings?
I mean, if you put it that way, the answer would seem to be overwhelmingly no. On the other hand, could that affair have gone on, Tom, in the age of Facebook and social media and everybody, you know, I mean, did anybody write about that affair during the war? Anybody?
No, I don't think anybody did. And Kay Summersby actually would kind of deny it. And then very late in her life, just before she died, she wrote a memoir that was pretty explicit about their relationship.
I mean, whether it's in the military or many aspects of public life, this social media era does raise questions about whether things that worked at one time worked, quote unquote, depending how you look at it. But it was still,
you're
still
right.
Do.
I mean, when I write emails, my own standard for writing an email is, would I be bothered if this appeared on the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post? And if I think it would, I don't send it. That said, you know, what are you going to do with a soldier you've sent out to Iraq or Afghanistan who happens to send some flirtatious or even salacious emails to a woman back here? What else is he going to do? I mean, you know, they're sitting out there in a war zone. I just find this odd, the standards we're trying to hold people to, especially because this is not a war in which the nation has engaged in. For the last 10 years, 1% of our society has fought these wars, and the other 99% has ignored them. And then we're saying, oh, and by the way, don't write any appropriate emails while you're in a combat zone. This is just not a standard that I've ever seen applied before, and I think it's morally reckless of us.
Well, but here's Patrice. He's civilian now, and he's head of the CIA. Here, one of our listeners, Greg, writes, people at that level of power hold many secrets and control the lives of thousands. If they make themselves vulnerable to blackmail, they need to be out. If their judgment is that poor, they need to be out.
I'm not sure it's vulnerable to blackmail. That was the argument that used to be used against homosexuals serving in the government. They had to go because they could be blackmailed. But if everybody is told about it, if in this instance Petraeus told his wife, made amends, everybody was informed, the president was informed, but it wasn't made public, I'm not sure that it would be blackmailable. If somebody said, well, I'm going to make it public, then you issue a one-line response saying it's a private matter, it's been dealt with, and it's in the past.
I mean, but, you know, it's already it's out there. I mean, there's the FBI guy, there's the Jill Kelly, there's the, you know, the shirtless stuff already. And, I mean, you just – how do you keep anything out of the public eye these days?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think you can keep things out of the public eye, but I've got real questions about the FBI poking through people's emails.
Mm.
I mean, what the hell? I mean, what kind of society do we live in which the FBI decides its own initiative to start investigating the emails between lovers or jilted lovers? I mean, is there an FBI office for soap opera affairs?
No, but they do look at cyber stalking. Here was a woman who said it was an example of that. On the other hand, how quickly things get politicized. I mean, they took the guy who showed his naked chest to Jill Kelly off the case because he seemed political in his interest.
You know, I get hate emails all the time. It would never occur to me to go to the FBI or even to the police and say, people are being mean to me on the internet. I mean, I just don't see how the FBI investigation of this is justified. And I wonder about the stuff that's coming out, you know, 36,000 pages of emails. Is an FBI attempt to kind of cover themselves for going where in a free society they should not go?
Michael in Beaufort, North Carolina. Michael, you're on the air.
I agree with many of the general points Mr. Ricks is making, but there's very one specific damning thing. And for example, I think Clinton and Lewinsky, we suffered for 2 years for that mess. But what I understand is that this went on for 2 years where subordinates were telling him that it was inappropriate, that he was changing. She was out there in the field. People were concerned. He was not the same guy. This guy had to go with the way the thing was going. The specifics of this are much more damning, I think, than the general arguments about that he's making.
Michael, let me hold that one, if I may, and get one more. Janine, Amana, Iowa, you're on the air, Janine.
Thank you, Tom. I think everyone ought to chill out. The people who are doing most of the talking have been around long enough to know something about men and about women. and so they should not get so excited about this. I do think I'm more concerned about General Allen, if he's emailing someone 20 times a day on average. It doesn't matter whether they have a physical relationship. That's an obsession. With General Petraeus, maybe he felt he had to resign, but I don't think Obama should have accepted that resignation. Sometimes the good of the country has to go ahead of the prestige of the military or the CIA. I am stunned, though, that neither one of these men who supposedly have average intelligence knew that email is public information.
Not least Gmail in the case of General Petraeus here. Janine, thanks for that. Tom, I think we've got these perspectives on the table. I don't want to miss the meat of your bigger argument here, that we've got a lot of generals not doing a good job in recent years, even decades, and something has happened to the culture and systems of our military that are not rooting those out and putting better folks in. What's going on and why, Tom?
The central question that I try to address in the book is why in World War II did we have a Darwinian system in which the generals were accountable, in which the successful were rewarded and the unsuccessful were moved out? Basically, in World War II, General George Marshall, the chief of staff of the Army, gave officers 90 days to either succeed, get killed, or get removed. During World War II, 155 men commanded Army divisions in combat. Of those 155, 16 were fired. These days, as a colonel says in my book, no one gets fired for anything. And sort of mediocrity is the target. You get very average performance, and people rotate in and rotate out every year. And you can see this sort of casual approach to generalship, especially in the war in Afghanistan. We are about to have our 11th commander there in 11 years. That's no way to run anything. If you ran a corporation like that with a new CEO every year for 11 years, it would almost certainly collapse. The shareholders would be in an uproar. War is much more serious than running a corporation, yet we put up with this sort of very casual approach. To go back to one of my favorite generals.
Why are we rotating so often? Because it's just kind of sharing around the notch on the gun of commanding there, as opposed to looking for someone
to... I really don't know why. I think it's partly because of inattention. The military is a big bureaucracy, and it just churns along until somebody questions it. And we have a Congress these days that doesn't understand the military, that doesn't know a lot about it, and is afraid to criticize it. And as a nation, we also don't know the military well, and we don't want to repeat the mistake of Vietnam, so we all support the troops. And we think that supporting the generals is part of supporting the troops. In fact, one way to support the troops is to give them good leadership and to ask questions of our generals, ask hard questions of our generals. And we don't. And as a nation, we have put up with some pretty mediocre performances, especially the sort of just rotating guys in and out every year. People go and do their tour and come home.
It's careerism over competence, you're saying.
Yeah, and it's sort of like being a general has become like being a university professor. You have tenure. You can do a lousy job, but you can keep it as long as you keep your pants on and don't embarrass the institution with moral lapses.
You describe your colonel saying that there's a bigger price to pay if a private loses a gun than if a general loses a battle or even maybe a war.
Yeah, that was Lieutenant Colonel Paul Yingling, a very bright young officer with a PhD whose works are studied at the Army War College, yet he himself was not promoted to go to the Army War College. I think part just another one of those officers who is probably too smart for his own good.
So is there a way of addressing this without somehow getting Americans more tied into the military again? I mean, in years past, we had big wars, we had drafts, people went, and every family cared when their son and later daughter was engaged.
There's a very telling phrase that military families use, skin in the game. Mm-hmm. As a nation, we don't have skin in the game. And so, yeah, I mean, the bottom line is I would love to see the reinstatement of a draft, if only to connect a great democracy to its military operations. These days we have this disconnect, in which wars are waged on our behalf by 1%. And we throw these people out there again and again and again. And to go back to the caller from Omaha, the military wife, we have asked too much of 1% with the tours of duty we've put them through. We have many, many soldiers with much more time in combat zone than we did in World War II.
What's the shape of the draft that you would suggest? It's not just the old-fashioned get a number and if it's called.
No, I wouldn't want to see a Vietnam-style draft. I would love to see a three-part draft in which if you were drafted, you got huge post-service benefits, probably a free ride through college, concessionary loans in the rest of your life and so on. A second option would be alternative national service, mm-hmm. You know, clean up the inner city, take meals to elderly shut-ins and so on. And the third would be a libertarian opt-out, which is I'm not interested in serving Uncle Sam. Fine, no problem. Just don't ask Uncle Sam for anything. You get no college loans. You get no federal mortgage guarantees, mm-hmm. anything like that. And if at age 50 you decide you were wrong, you can, fine, come in to serve a year and drive a general around.
So a lot more people might get involved failing that, because I don't see that on the horizon right now. You're calling on politicians not to defer so much, but as I read you, Tom, to ask more. A performance, I guess not deployment. There we've asked a lot, but performance.
Yeah, and part of the problem is as our political elites and our society and, in fact, our media no longer understand the military sufficiently to judge combat effectiveness. They don't know what success looks like, and so they take the military's word for it. But these days, the generals do not police themselves. They're operating much more like a guild or a union than they are like stewards of their profession.
And this at a time when the military is more active and than ever. I mean, it's become a tool of foreign policy all over the place. Robert Wright's writing in the Atlantic that the real, as he sees it, the real Petraeus scandal is not about the Paula Broadwell, but about the militarization of the CIA, the fact that it was such a natural move to go from top general to the head of the CIA, the fact that the CIA has become a kind of wing of the military at this point. Do you worry about that, Tom? Our intelligence lead agency becoming so militarized itself?
Not particularly. I think the first head of the CIA was a former Army general. I do worry, though, about what a friend of mine calls fire and forget foreign policy. Drone warfare, in which every day out there we have drone aircraft firing Hellfire missiles and killing people in various countries. Mm. Yet it just seems to go on with a state of national inattention. In fact, more than inattention, we don't want to hear about it anymore. The American people are sick of the Middle East. They're sorry they ever heard of Iraq. They just want out of Afghanistan and they don't want people to bother us. Yet at the same time, we have targeted assassination programs going on with drone aircraft.
All over. Anna in Clarksville, Tennessee. Thanks for calling, Anna. You're on. Hello, Anna. Are you there? Hello, Anna. Let's get one more then from Tom in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Tom. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say I'd like to read your book. I wonder if you saw any connection between the failure of some military leaders and the length of the engagements, or perhaps the lack of goal, because I think one of the problems with these two particular engagements we've had in Iraq and Afghanistan has been, the lack of a goal, once we got into these countries, and perhaps that added some stress and some vulnerability to the leaders. But lastly, you intimated that Fox News was, spending and spinning too much about some of these military failures. Do you think that perhaps the neoconservative high moral right is making us focus on the wrong values? The fact that General Petraeus had an extramarital relationship, is that somewhat connected to our whole moral family values right to life type of movement where we're
Tom, that's a lot, and our time is short. Let me take it right there, if I may. Tom Ricks, duration, indirection, and then the moral question.
The moral question, I think, is, we are somehow being more intrusive about people's lives than used to be, and it does bother me. Duration is a very good question. It's something I thought about a lot as I wrote the book, and I sort of have some tentative thoughts that I can't prove, which is, yes, when you rotate everybody through, it's nobody's job is the entire war. They just go into a one-year rotation, and then they go home. And they can claim success. I was successful in my one-year tour of command, but then my successor screwed it up. In World War II, you were in it for the duration. The road home led through Berlin.
Yeah,
and there's no sense of closing it now, of here's the overall picture. It reminds me of something Warren Buffett once said. If you've been playing poker for half an hour and you don't know who the patsy at the table is, you're the patsy.
Yeah.
When you rotate commanders through, you basically make your new commander every year the patsy at the table.
Tom Ricks, you know David Petraeus well. Do you think we will see him back in the public eye and public life?
I was discussing that with a friend this morning, and I'm not sure because his image was so much built on this sense of honor. I think it's going to be harder for him to rehabilitate himself than, say, Eliot Spitzer, who was involved in a far more scandalous situation as governor of New York.
And right back in the public eye. Thomas Ricks, author of the big new book covering decades of U.S. military history, The Generals, American Military Command from World War II to Today. Tom, it's great of you to be with us today. Good luck with the book. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Listeners, thank you for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.